the volume now, can we?
It's not going to be the volume.
Oh, okay.
But it can eventually.
All right, tell me when you're ready, ladies.
I'll let everybody in.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the October meeting of the Gambling Control Board meeting. We'll begin with introductions of the board staff, and I'll start to my right today.
Al Schofield, board member, Winthrop.
Barbara Dressler, board member from Saco.
Robert Hyman, board member from Raymond.
And my name's Tim Doyle, I'm chair of the board, and I'm from Turner. Next, I would ask for introductions of the Attorney General's staff.
Ron Gay, Assistant Attorney General.
Okay, and finally, the Executive Director and his staff.
Yes, good morning, Mel Champion, Executive Director of Gambling Control. With us today, we have our Commissioner, Michael Salchuk, our Office Specialist, Katie Boyton, our Licensing Office Assistant, Mallory Riley, and we're proud to say we have a new auditor. He's been with us a week, so we're really excited. James Orr has joined us. And our Inspector Supervisor, Vicki Gardner, and Detective of the State Police, Don Armstrong.
First up on the agenda would be approval of the minutes. There are a couple of corrections on the last page, page 3 of the minutes. Under unfinished business 2, it indicates that Barbara Dressler made a motion. She was, in fact, not here. That should be Al Schofield. And under adjournment, it indicates that Barbara seconded a motion to adjourn. Again, she wasn't here. That should be Greg McNeil. Are there any other recommended changes, additions, or corrections?
I move the minutes as amended.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Hearing no other changes, those in favor?
Aye.
That's 3.
Yeah.
3-4, 1 abstention. Brings us to the Executive Director's Report, Mr. Champion.
Yes, good morning. Under operations in September 2019, we had 9 shipments of machines and or associated equipment shipped to or from licensed facilities. On-site inspectors completed 758 observations, 37 checklists. There were 2 minor violations being monitored from our activity log. We had 0 patron complaints, and there are 2 dispositions of formal reports were sent for members review per statute, and there were 10 self-exclusions. For the month of September 2019, we've identified an increase of 0.6% in total tax revenue for both facilities versus September 2018. Year to date, we've identified an increase of 0.5% versus last year at the same time. Oxford reported an 8.2% win for the month of September from slots and 22.3% win from table games. Oxford's payback percentage was 91.8%. with an average gross win per machine of $234.75. Hollywood reported 9.8% average win for the month of September from slots and 28.1% win from table games. Hollywood's payback percentage was 90.2% with an average gross win per machine was $169.76. The ADW RFP was published on October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. There will be no public hearing. Questions regarding the contents of the RFP are due October 25th. Proposals are due December 10th. Under Resolution 3, I've issued a consent agreement to Travis Lombard and Timothy Lardo. The agreements are a part of your meeting package and were sent prior to the meeting today. Both have agreed to the consent agreement by their signatures. That is my report.
Any questions of the Executive Director?
Excuse me.
Hearing none, can you just briefly bring the board to speed? I received at least one notice personally from somebody in the public that notified me that there's a posting from Twin Spires that the Maine Gambling Control Board shut down their advanced deposit wagering.
Okay.
So you address that?
Yeah, I'll follow
it. Just to make the board aware in case somebody calls down.
Sure. I'll let Ron address that.
That's yeah. Sure. So we've seen constituent, I don't want to say complaints, concerns, and they have been around and specific to the vendor Twin Spires. I think, though, what I'd like to do is give the board sort of a bigger briefing. You might recall back in either March or April, we had the Department of Public Safety had received information that there were people or entities accepting wagers from citizens in the state of Maine, and we brought to you a letter that was an educational letter. And so our what the board agreed was our path forward from the Gambling Control Board's perspective would be that the you guys looked at the letter and thought it was okay to send out under the board's letterhead, and that we distinguished it. These are not cease and desist letters. What we indicated was those would require a bit of investigation, and that we would actually, before issuing a cease and desist letter, we would bring to the board and make a presentation of our belief on any specific entity, and then ask for a cease and desist letter. The way that would fit in is, I know there's a complaint resolution discussion, so this might actually dovetail a little bit about that. When the department receives a notice of a potential violation of the gambling control law, and that advanced deposit wagering is in that section, well, the department does an investigation, and if it's a written, especially if it's a written complaint, during the pendency of that investigation, it's confidential. Any investigation the department does is confidential up until we get to a certain point. And we can get into that later in the agenda if we need to. So where we are with advanced deposit wagering, we are currently investigating, I think it's, we have 9 active entities that we're investigating, and that we're anticipating that perhaps, I mean, my goal is to the extent that we finish our work, to the extent we need and require formal cease and desist letters, we would present those to you in November. I would say that perhaps I can't speak for Twin Spires. To the extent that there's been educational letters laying out beliefs of what the statute says, did the Gambling Control Board, did you folks issue a letter to them telling them specifically, you know, within the last couple of weeks to stop? No, I'd like to get on the record that's not accurate. But we did send an educational letter out to the variety of entities, a lot of entities. I think it was the May time frame, and I understand some facilities may have only received them in the July time frame. So that's sort of the big picture of what's going on.
Just to boil it down and simplify it, there's a long way of saying, really, advanced deposit wagering right now is not legal in Maine. The board is in the process of seeking one vendor, which is what the law authorizes, and to the extent that people are conducting advanced deposit wagering entities, that we become aware of, we put an educational letter together. So entities that have stopped this, the reason I mentioned Twin Spires specifically is I had a text forwarded to me showing that, and that was news to me, and I shared it with the executive director. And I just wanted the board to be aware that if they hear about it in the public, that's what's happened. Any questions? Anything further on the executive director's report?
No, sir.
Questions of the board?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, that brings us to the state police report.
Good morning. Because I was at training for the last board meeting, my report will be covering the last 2 months. So the numbers will reflect over the last 2 months. Over that time period, new licenses that were investigated and completed were 58. Renewal license during that same time period was 99 for a total. 53 were done in September and 46 in October. There are currently still 40 applications pending to be investigated. And in the same time period, there have been 24 thefts in the 2 months. All funds have been either recovered, accounts were flagged, or local agencies, Oxford PD or Bangor, handling it, if was requested specifically.
And the theft, just so...
Yeah, it's Tito theft, the same thing. As
somebody before. Leaves their voucher in the machine and...
Correct, and then someone will pick it up, and usually contacts made by security. They really do a good job of that, and funds are recovered that way. However, sometimes they bolt before contact's made, so they'll flag the accounts and usually get payback that way. Calls for service from Bangor PD had 25 calls for service. I didn't receive anything from Oxford as far as their numbers go. And other than that, everything's okay. No major issues to report.
Okay. Any questions of the detective? No. Thank you. All right, that brings us down to unfinished business, and the first item up is promotional credits and proposed rulemaking. So you can lead us through that.
Yeah, we, in looking at promotional credits in regards to Hollywood's request at the last meeting regarding the ability to upload or download credits from one machine to another, we realized we really didn't have distinct promotional credit rules. So I put together both Katie and I, Katie Johnson also did a review of what I thought we could start out with. These would be technical rules. And so what I'd like to do is get the board's approval to go forth in the rulemaking process with the proposed text that we have under promotional credits. In addition to that, at the same time, when we repealed the last mix rule changes, when we repealed the indication of hopper and coin and that sort of thing, we did it, or I should say I did it, under Windows 10, which has this unique little feature to save things when you don't know what's being saved. And so there were some indications of some of the rules were stripped or taken from away from the addition that is now in the Secretary of State's office. So what I'd like to do is get your approval to go forth with proposed promotional credit rules as you've been given, and then at the same time of that of those proposals, also incorporate the changes back in the mix to you also got a copy of that where I highlighted the different various pages where they those rules had to be placed back in to the mix. Again, they were taken out through technology, if you will. I've since obviously turned that feature off or figured out how I could. So these would be the two copies that would go out. We're not going to have a public hearing. These will go out for public comment, and they'll have the facilities, and everybody would have 30 days to comment on these. Katie and I will look at what their suggestions and comments are, and then obviously we would bring those comments back to the board for your final approval.
Are there any questions about what's been proposed? That's behind tab 5, correct? Back in.
Yeah, the ones with the yellow is the ones where we're putting back into the mix what was inadvertently taken out when it shouldn't have been, when we did the hopper removal, the hopper and the coin.
Yep.
Okay, and then the promotional credits is probably a 2-page document which just talks about, and it's all underlined, so it's additional language. It would be the one before or after this one here in line with your
tab 8.
Is it tab 8?
Yeah, 7 hours. You did just before, yeah.
Okay, so that's the promotional credits. There's two parts to that. I will say, I do want to say this, though. I want you to take, I'd like you to take a look at the promotional credit part. In the first part, subsection one, it talks about promotional credits through a slot machine. That was pretty directive from statute. The next part on page two, the subsection, is table game player incentives. And I had a long discussion with the AAGs about this, and it was their determination through the junket services definition that we would have the ability to allow table game player incentives, which would be like match play and free bet as an example, and they were also put apart as a part of this. Because we added the word voucher into this, or we actually used the word voucher in the definition in that part of the table game player incentives, we had to move the word voucher from three other individual rules. So they'll be attached to this as well.
Three of the rules not involving credit, but mentioned elsewhere in our rules.
Yeah, it's chapter three. This should be a part of. I think I printed them off. Sorry.
Yep.
So you have chapter three.
Yep.
So we're moving the word voucher. Keeping it as tickets in chapter three, control of licenses, and then there's two other chapters, licensee records. We're taking the term voucher out of there. And leaving in credits or adding credits to that. So that's basically what we did. We had to go into those three rules because vouchers were defined as something totally different. We had to separate the definition between a ticket and a voucher.
All right.
Okay.
At our last meeting when we were talking about the promotional credits, the facilities, there was a plan to get you together with the facilities. Did that happen, or... when we announce that we're going to rulemaking, will this be the first time that they see it?
No, unfortunately, under the way the rulemaking administrative act is that I can't really have those conversations. What we do is we put together a proposed rule, proposed text, and then we put it out for public comment, and then that's when they have their 30 days to come back. So they can add to this, they can subtract to this. I know we had discussion. There were some discussions about minimums and maximums and all that sort of thing. None of that is actually in this proposed text. What I did is I looked obviously at several other states and what they did with promotional credits, both from the slot machine aspect and from table games, and really wasn't a whole lot. And so that's why I kept it kind of short and sweet.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I can, so informally, you can't confer and share information with the casinos prior to rulemaking?
Correct. By the administrative act, yes. It's not made public until we, in other words, I would have to propose the text to you. You would approve for rulemaking, and then it would go out for comment. And if Ron wants to expound on that a little bit more.
Okay.
Right. There is a form of rulemaking that allows for the participation of folks during the drafting of the text, but that is a very cumbersome process. And I think I understand your question. Is it okay to call and ask a casino whether 10 versus 21 makes more sense? I think that's okay. I think where the line starts getting fuzzy is to actually share text or receive text and from the casino. So I'm aware that there may have been a couple of phone calls where early on, before text is developed, you know, what would you like? Do you want limited, unlimited? As a matter of fact, I heard some of those conversations right here in this room. So that's all okay. I think the difference is with rulemaking is once you have text, you can't get text from outside, and you can't share it with other people before it's published. But certainly a discussion after it's published is going to happen.
Okay, and the status of what's going on now, we had one facility that was using promotional credit, the other facility that wanted to. Are they now both authorized?
They were both using promotional credits. One was actually downloading or uploading from their card to the machine and then back using it at a different machine. And so the other facility wanted to do that as well.
Right.
The board gave their approval and then was asked that we go ahead and put together some type of promotional credit.
Right.
During that conversation, and I have had conversations with the facilities, not specific to the wording here, but any examples, they did help me out with what other states might have some good rulemaking, and so that information was passed. But as far as what you're seeing here today, that hasn't been distributed yet.
But both facilities, per the board's vote at the last meeting, have moved ahead with what we authorized.
Yes.
And then this will kind of formalize.
Yes, one facility was already doing it, and you authorized the other facility to proceed.
Correct.
Yep.
Can I ask one more question, Mr. Chairman? Just remind me in terms of the accounting for promotional credits, does it feed into our financials?
On the slot machine side, it does.
On both sides.
But it will not on the table game side.
So when you say...
So they get...
on the slots as what? What's that read as? Part of the gross revenue?
Yeah, they get credit dollar for dollar on any promotional credits that they give out. Okay, so in the calculation that would come out of the gross,
on a net basis, it's really not counted as part of the growth of the total revenue.
It's taken out, yes.
Okay.
Yes. They get credit for it.
Okay.
On the table game side, that has not been allowed by statute. So right now, as this rolls out in the next, you know, couple of months and gets adopted, once it's adopted, the table game side of this, they would not get the credits. So whatever table games it would be considered, I guess, part of their marketing, the price or the cost of marketing, but they would not get a credit for it through the calculations taxes due to the state.
So when you say that by statute on the table game, not allowed.
Right.
Which statute is that?
There is no statute that says you get credit for promotional credits for the use in at a table.
Lack of a statute.
Correct.
What the statute says.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's no statute that gives the ability for them to get credit.
There's
for
a statute
credit.
For the slots.
Pardon?
There is a statute for the slots.
Yes. Yes.
Where's that statute?
I'd have to look it up.
Well, isn't that kind of odd? We have a slot, we don't have a table game.
Well, I think because it was originally established when there was only slots. So Hollywood probably had gotten them back in 2005, and then when they made the transition, or they went from just a slot machine operator to a casino operator, and they had allowed both to have table games. They didn't incorporate table games into that calculation.
So we're going to try to put a statute together to provide the credit.
I'll
make sure we're consistent between the two.
I think that would be up to the facilities. Yes.
So where was the statute?
I'm sorry. I haven't looked.
No, just let me know sometime. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah.
Thank you. Get that information.
Yeah, I will.
All right. Does the board have any questions regarding what's proposed for rulemaking? And again, this is not intended for hearing, but you're going to publish the rulemaking 30 days. And so we'd be ready either at November if we meet, talk about that after, there's a couple of conflicts.
Yeah.
Or December at the latest.
I would think December.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely not November. Well, you know what? Honestly, with legal review and everything, I think we're looking at January.
Okay.
Yep.
Any questions or issues with what's proposed to be published? All right, with the appropriate appropriate motion be to authorize publishing?
To proceed with the rulemaking process, yes, sir.
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Seeing nothing further, those in favor? That's unanimous. Anything else under unfinished business?
No, sir.
All right, under new business, on the board with a soccer board, this is why we need one.
Okay. Back when we first started out with a central monitoring system, the initial contract had a, under audit requirements, it had in there the ability for the board at any time to ask for a annual report or a SOC report, which is a service organization control report. Basically, it's done on the system, the auditing standards for the system that we use, and the actual individuals that, like Scientific Games, they would be the ones that would be audited on how their controls are. In the audit requirement says, in addition to the annual audit, there's a periodic internal control audit of successful bidders of the central monitoring system operations may be required by the board to be conducted by an independent public accounting firm. These audits will be conducted pursuant to a statement of auditing standards by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. The board shall, in the exercise of its sole discretion, determine the need for such an audit and arrange for and pay 50% of the cost of that such an audit. The board reserves the right to the specific type of report and the control objections to be examined. We were audited by the state auditor's office, the unit ourselves, and in so that one of those recommendations out of that audit was to have a SOC report done. They've been very adamant. In fact, we're now going through our second one, and they were asking specifically if we had had a SOC audit yet. I found out through that the Maine Lottery is currently undergoing a SOC 1 audit of the system, of their system, with Scientific Games. It was also their contract. And because the equipment's in the same building as the slot central system, we were able to negotiate a much lower price for the specific independent public accountant's office to do the audit of the central monitoring system in addition to the lottery system. The savings will be about $50,000 versus having a separate audit altogether. So the board cost would be $10,000, and therefore I'm asking for the board's approval to proceed with getting this SOC report done at that price.
In terms of the savings, the $50,000 would be our savings versus contracting on our own?
Yes. If this went out as a separate bid, then it could be upwards of $60,000 to $70,000 for the audit. But because this individual or this firm is doing it in the same building, it's kind of like a two-for-one package. We discussed it with Scientific Games, and the cost to the board would be $10,000. So, obviously, a good price to get this done, to get it done now, and then of course, you know, the state auditor's office would be extremely happy with that outcome as well.
Barbara may remember this. I have a vague memory of we rejected the option of having one in the past, mm-hmm. and the state auditor wasn't happy with us. You know, she reminded me once. So,
says what? What does SOC stand
for? It's the Service Organization Control. It's an auditing standard. Report. It's reports on the processing of transactions by service organizations, and it's issued by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
So because we're a public entity engaged in a public contract, the audit is to make sure that they're doing what they should be doing.
Yeah, and this
service to the state. state.
And from what I've gathered, because I'm not a public accountant, but what I've gathered from the research that I've done, it's more on the service and the technical aspect of it, what they do with the data, how that information is stored, and all that sort of thing. So it has to do a little bit more of security and not so much the numbers. So that's why they're requesting this to be done.
Okay.
So how often does this have to be done? Every year?
If the board so desires, yes. It would be every year.
Well, what about this? Is there a requirement that we do it every year?
No. No, it's completely at the discretion of the board.
We haven't done one to date, at least.
No.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So is that report going to be issued to the board?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
I'd be very interested in seeing that. It's really kind of getting an audit of the overview of the whole department, the whole gambling process. I think that's really good.
Well, it's going to be on the central monitoring system, and specifically Scientific Games as operations.
Oh, so it's targeted just for that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, the $10,000 is in the Department of Public Safety's budget.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Or does the board want a SOC audit?
I'll make the motion.
Right, so we have a motion to proceed with one. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any questions? Seeing none, those in favor? That's unanimous. Is there a time frame?
No, but they're going to start working on it right away. As soon as I can get the approval to them, they'll start on it immediately. Because
okay.
I think they're actually doing lottery at this time right now. So, again, it's a two-for-one deal.
Very good. So who's doing the audit?
Barry Dunn.
Is Barry Dunn's doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Next, under new business, we have two requests from individuals who are seeking to be removed from a lifetime exclusion. For the board's purposes, we should not mention these individuals by name. Those are in here. Point me to the tab. 7?
6.
Okay.
These will help out. One is typed and the other one is handwritten. So we can identify them that way.
That's it.
So whichever one you want to discuss first.
Okay. We probably should number these so we have a way to actually refer to them.
Okay.
So for today's purposes, I'll refer to the first one as the typed request.
Okay.
That typed request comes in. I'll read it. It's fairly short. I'm writing to request that my name be removed from the self-exclusion list. I originally signed up for the lifetime list and realized that I did so hastily at the time. When I signed up, I knew I needed a break to do some self-reflection and figure out what my stresses at the time were and what was drawing me to the casino. By doing this self-analysis, I determined that my time at the casino was not the biggest stressor in my life. It was actually a relief from the everyday stress, and I actually enjoyed playing. I also enjoyed the overall atmosphere of the facility. I now realize that I should have done a shorter exclusion time. Since my self-exclusion, my life has changed as well as my priorities. I truly enjoy visiting my family, which now includes 3 grandchildren, whom I enjoy spending lots of time with and are my primary focus. I'm traveling around more and explore more the many opportunities Maine has to offer, as well as exploring other states. And that the casino is not the only thing for excitement. My self-reflection also showed me that although we are not drinking people, that on rainy days or just a casual evening, the casino is a fun place to go and watch people and other events. With the self-exclusion, I'm no longer able to enjoy the events that go on at the Hollywood Casino, since this was my closest casino, as well as meet up with family and friends. He thanks us for the opportunity. So is this individual here, you do have a right, if you're here, to present further information or address the board. You don't have to come forward. We don't know who you are. We're not seeking to have you speak, but if you are interested. Seeing none, that would be the request. And just for, again, the board's prerogative, if you exclude yourself from life, you can apply to be reinstated after 5 years?
Correct.
So that 5-year period is passed. Otherwise, it wouldn't be before us, correct?
Yes.
I didn't see the original application this time. I know you've provided them to us in the past. Is there a reason this time, or was it just...
No, no, not really.
Was his original request consistent with his,
yes,
his letter? You're hired, right? You're saving somebody from themselves sometimes. It's hard to make a decision in a letter, but it's what we have before us.
Personally, would like to see the original application, or I'm not sure that I'm using the correct term, only so that I can...
The original exclusion?
Yeah, so that I can...
Can we put our hands on that? You've made... Yeah. Why don't you do them both?
Yep. They not first, but it's...
Just comment, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I think the reason, I'm guessing folks go on that list is they, where they self-exclude, they feel that they have some kind of an addiction gambling. And it'd be great to see that they went through, because we do funding for addiction. And to me, I just think people ought to go through that process before asking to come off an exclusion.
Tell you what, while we're waiting for the backup paperwork, why don't I read the second one so that when we're ready to go, that I think someone in the sense of the facts. I'll read the second one. He states his name and his address. I'm requesting removal from the exclusion list. I self-excluded over 5 years ago for life. Today, I am in a better place with my choices and my commitment with my time. When I chose to self-exclude, I was spending too much time and money at the casino. There was a couple different stresses in my life that at the time contributed to my decision 5+ years ago. I made the right choice then, and with the support and approval of my wife, I am requesting reinstatement of gaming privileges. I'll be 59 years old in February, and I have a regular set of activities and daily commitments like most people my age. I do enjoy the casino atmosphere and miss the opportunity of being involved in the activities that are offered. Sir, I am making this request with the full knowledge that you can deny this request. My hope is that you will consider my request with favor, that I have my privileges and my commitment to them in order, that my resources are guarded, and my family security is of the highest priority. That's the second request. Is this individual here? And again, you don't need to come forward. Okay. Take a minute for Mallory to get those.
Mr. Chairman, I just asked me a question.
Sure.
What is the process when someone accesses our ability to go through rehab on the addiction?
I'm not sure I understand.
I think he's asking if somebody approaches us for rehabilitation, and the answer is we would send them over to the Office of Substance Abuse, whatever that's called now.
It's out of care. Yeah.
And we care. Fund that. They get,
yes,
some funds.
Yes, they get some fundings from us, yes. I've actually, at the last meeting, or in fact, the last time that we had a conversation about self-exclusions, that we had the kind of discussion about what would be the guidelines, I guess, for the board to make a decision, and I did reach out to AdCare at the last meeting, and we discussed the possibility of maybe utilizing something similar to what Massachusetts uses. They use it's called Game Sense. And in that, if someone requests to come off of it, they actually go through an exit interview. And I asked AdCare if they didn't have some professionals that would possibly be able to do, have these interviews. And then that way you would have something a little bit more of a basis to go off of, in addition to whatever request that they sent in writing. So that's something that I'm working on now to see if we can't make that work for us. I have not seen the interview questions or anything like that, so it's very premature at this point.
So we do pay out from that fund that we have for addiction counseling, right?
Yes.
Yes. So people do access it.
Oh, yes. In fact, you can go to some of these sub-offices, if you will, and you can actually be, you go there and get self-excluded. You don't necessarily.
Yeah, what's that program like? I mean, you meet once a week or something like that? Or
I have no clue. I've not looked into that. I don't know what they do.
If we can invite them actually to a future meeting. I know they've been to meetings of ours, and we contributed funds. In fact, last year, I think you gave a couple $1,000 at the end, right?
Yes.
For sponsorship. It might be worth developing a process just so that we have at least a little bit of insight from somebody who's trained to recognize whether or not they may have a bigger problem than they're letting on.
Sure.
It worries me a little bit when you hear someone's standard language that tells me that some counseling was probably there. The stressors in my life is mentioned in both letters. I think we've seen that in other people seeking to be.
The facilities is mentioned in both. I noticed the same thing, same words in both of them.
You can see that the process, you know, the request is certainly done with their, you know, it's time consuming. They have to initial each of their understandings and authorizations. It's not something that is done hastily. That can be done either here or at the facilities, right? Both facilities have a process as well.
And then they can also come here to this office, and then their satellite offices attached with AdCare, where there's several different offices that also do them, yes.
I could support if you want to develop more of a process before we let people off of the exclusion, I could support that.
Yeah, I just think it, and I like what Mill said, you know, someone would interview someone like these two folks and comment as to whether they think that they're capable of managing their addiction. And it just helps our process. I'm just saying that. Cure it.
Is there any legal issues relative to that, though? Is there a problem with somebody that listens to these people and reports to us, so that's what we're thinking? Is that a problem?
There's no clear guidance as to taking people off the 5-year, the lifetime, other than the 5 years. So to the extent the board would like to have a process, I think that's okay, depending on how, you know, what that process is. Certainly, I think that it would be defensible to say that you want to have someone be interviewed. If it's a half-hour interview, and they can persuade, because I think you're right, the language that I've heard in here are indicative that they've been through some type of counseling. So people who are counselors would be able to look at these statements in a better position than perhaps anyone at this table, and you could rely on that. I think that's reasonable. But I would say you can't punt it to them, but you could say we'd like to see, as part of the submission, an interview with a professional, and I think that would be rational and reasonable. Now, you might disagree with the opinion of the professional, so you need to allow yourself that room.
Barbara?
One thing, Milt, and I recall noticing this last time too, the one of the, we're now past 5 years, but at the time of application it was just shy. I'm not sure it should have come to us, I think it should have waited until, to be accepted until the 5 years have passed.
Right.
Anybody prepared to make a motion? And again, I'm comfortable, Bob, with your suggestion that we maybe get, what do you call them now?
Exit interviews or?
Well, no, the Office of the State Ad Care.
Ad Care.
We get Ad Care in here and at least have a conversation at a future meeting with the short process. And it may not have to be Ad Care, although that may be the location, but if we have some information from a counselor, that may help us in making a decision.
So, for example, these individuals may have a counselor.
They may.
They may, yeah. So, I would agree, I think it would probably be a good idea not to, like, pick the counselor that would have to do it.
Yeah.
But if they don't have someone, then I think the executive director could suggest they go to these people.
Right, but I think Ad Care is our resource to begin a discussion.
But and that's something that we pay for out of our fund, right?
We at least contribute funds toward it. I don't know that it would be unfair to say we pay their entire budget. We don't. They get some money from gambling as part of the cascade.
So just as a sidebar, so who actually does the accounting for that fund? So so much money comes out of the revenue we receive that goes into that,
right?
That fund. But who monitors or who handles that fund?
That would come through our office.
Yeah. Who?
From our office. we would drive the funds to be paid out.
Okay.
Yes.
Forfeited winnings, for example, I think is something that goes there as well.
Right. Think of it as a grant. So we don't have oversight of how the money is spent once the recipient gets the money.
Right.
Just like harness racing, purses.
University of Maine system.
It's a grant.
Okay, so you give a grant, let's say, to these two individuals, and you say come back with some kind of a counseling letter, and we'll...
Oh, I see what your question is.
And we'll
I don't think at this point I wouldn't, because we don't have any rules around it. We don't have...
It's just a dedicated funding stream that goes to Ad Care that can be used for these things. So I think at least beginning the discussion, we wouldn't give individuals on the list funds or a grant. We would direct them toward a potential resource. And they may have their own resources, as Ron's pointing out. And if they're in private counseling, that may be another good source to get a recommendation from somebody.
So, I mean, I think the motion is to table these requests for removal from the exemption pending further analysis of using Ad Care or some form of counseling for people who do apply to come off the exclusion list.
Yeah, it's not like it's a prerequisite of Ad Care to do this because we distribute to them funds every year. Ad Care is part of that system of offering to people that need assistance, that's where you go. But that's why I've had the conversation with them to see if they had the staffing or if there was somebody that could actually maybe take a phone call or an in-person type interview. It was, like I said, it was very, very premature, but I just wanted to kind of like start the conversation a little bit.
Well, I mean,
but it's not, they wouldn't be required to.
I mean, we're sending them money, so they must have, or should have, people available to handle these types of situations. I mean, what else would they be doing with the money?
Well, there's more than just gambling. There's alcohol, drugs, all kinds of stuff out there.
So the money we collect from the casinos, the gambling addiction gets co-mingled with a bunch of other funds?
No, I think they use it for whatever they're gambling.
We don't know until we hear from them.
Let's
get them back in here so we can... clarify.
Yeah, they also do some ad campaigns. You know, you see every once in a while we have a gambling problem that's called 2-1-1. There's a lot of uses for the funds, but we we have a motion to table pending some further information, and when we discuss when our next meeting is, maybe we can invite AdCare to the meeting and just begin a discussion, see where it goes.
Yeah, I actually have a meeting with them tomorrow afternoon, so that's how quick the discussion will start back up again.
Yeah, and just ask them where you're counting up the fund with that, when it comes back.
Okay, so we have a motion to table. Is there a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of tabling? That's unanimous, so these are tabled. Can let the two individuals know that their matter was tabled and
yep.
We discuss at a future meeting. Okay. That brings us to item seven. We've had a request from Hollywood Casino to have a discussion regarding the claim resolution. Now's that time. Good morning. Good morning. So I'd like to
start here for you. Thank you.
I'd like Mr. Hardy to introduce himself and to start the discussion.
Good morning. May it please the commission. I'm Joshua Tardy. I'm counsel for Hollywood Casino. With me today is Katie Foster from my office in Bangor at Rudman Winchell, Michael West, who's corporate legal from Penn National, and the leadership team from the casino is here as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Director Champion, and Attorney General Gay for accommodating us with this agenda request. We are, with the casino, very concerned about how disagreements regarding notices of violation are properly resolved in a fair and efficient manner. This is a general editorial comment. For there to be a due process for a licensee, and Hollywood Casino is entitled to it when there's a disagreement, I'm very confident that we could have a fair hearing. But fundamental to due process is one that's done without undue or unnecessary delay. And so I think it would be helpful if you could look at a timeline. For the record, I'm talking about complaint number 19-20, and by letter last week, with the authorization of my client, we withdrew our hearing request, and we're tendering the proposed fine amount as part of that notice of violation in the amount of $3,500. And so we are officially withdrawing our hearing request. And so it is our position that there is no pending matter related to complaint number 19-1.
Can I stop you for 1 second? Sorry. The board is yet unaware of complaint 19-20,
yes.
And that may be part of your presentation.
It is,
today.
And I have 6 copies, if I may. I have a timeline of events.
This one, right?
Yeah. So that's all right. So,
yeah.
The same thing. It's the same thing.
Okay.
So I'm in front of you. I'm sorry if I don't have enough copies, but it's a timeline of events. What we're talking about is a mistake made by a dealer at the Bangor facility on February 28th. And we can talk, you know, as much detail as one wants, but the fact of the matter is a mistake was made as a chip bill request was made. And the notice of alleged violation prepared by the Department of Public Safety described it in the summary as follows. 2 chip bills dropped on the wrong tables. Chip bill meant for table 302 was accidentally dropped on table 304. The table game supervisor, I won't name that person today, decided to order another fill in the amount of $2,400 for table 304 and dropped it on table 302 and placed error correction slips in each box to notify the county. So there was a mistake. There was an internal control violation. And as a result, on March 25, a notice of alleged violation was issued by the Maine Gambling Control Board and included this incident report that I just quoted from. And notice of alleged violation, I take it, is how we respond to complaints. I don't think the rules talk about a notice of alleged violation. They talk about complaints, and we completely agree that as a licensee, we have an absolute duty to cooperate, fully cooperate in an investigation. Okay? And let me just state for the record that everything alleged in the notice of alleged violation and then the subsequent notice of violation, we agree happened from a factual basis.
Can I stop you one more second?
Yes.
This violation came to the Gambling Control Board, the department, because of a self-report?
Yes. A self-report, an error notification slip, is the equivalent of what we call self-report. Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand it. So, okay.
So, the casino submitted its response on April 23. We got an email on May 17th from the executive director asking what the casino should have taken place and what the proper procedure was. In other words, do you know what you did wrong? Do you know what the proper procedures are? On May 28th, the casino received the actual notice of violation, which is docket number GCB 2019-20. That was submitted to the casino on behalf of the Gaming Control Board. I think that's significant. It's the board that's tasked with ultimately enforcing the Maine's gaming laws that are properly administered. A timely notice of hearing was submitted on June 14th. We requested a hearing. And you'll see from this case that the disagreement from the casino, from my client, is the fine amount. On July 29, the legal team for Hollywood Casino and Hollywood Casino's leadership decided to start copying the chair on the communication as we were persistent, I believe, in requesting a hearing on this matter. On July 29, we received communication from the Assistant Attorney General, who indicated that the next obvious step in an adjudicatory hearing, that will comport with the Maine Administrative Procedures Act was basically his investigation to see if there's a basis for the charge, if you will. He indicated that, and I quote, a notice of hearing is issued by me when I have concluded based on my own diligence that there is sufficient evidence of a material violation of law. And although it is not likely, it is possible that I could conclude that there is not a sufficient basis to prosecute your client and thus not issue a notice of hearing. I'm unsure and would seek the board's clarification on what authority Mr. Gay has in this regard. Once a notice of violation has actually been issued to the licensee and we've requested a hearing. I think we should have a hearing. I think we should have a hearing expeditiously.
And just to follow the process, to the point we're at now, July 29th, this matter still is not in the purview of the board based on current process. So the board's not aware, we haven't been noticed, because when a notice is issued, there's a 30-day period. If the 30-day period passes and there's a request for a hearing, it goes to hearing, and then I believe the attempt is to keep us as jurors, so to speak, free of knowing what the conduct alleged in the violation is until it's before us at hearing. If the matter is not, there's no request for a hearing within the 30 days, we become aware of it at that point. So to the point we're at today, although I was copied on this email, it was kind of in the dark, and I'm getting an email, to me it was saying there's a problem, right? Players, it's a problem, but I don't know what the alleged conduct was. And made sure I didn't, because I wanted to preserve my right or ability to hear it.
And we disagree with that approach from a legal standpoint. We think that this board can act in its judicial capacity as a fact finder and still know what the charge is and still know about the scheduling of the charge. It would be like telling a judge that he or she can't conduct a bail hearing or can't conduct an arraignment and then would have to recuse his or herself from the case. We think that you're tasked with your statutory obligations, that you can separate the role as fact finder in your judicial capacity and deliberate and still assist somebody that's coming in front of your court to allow them to expeditiously have their day in court. It happens in every other board across state government. It happens in the courts of this state. And we think that we can come to you and say, we want to talk about scheduling of this hearing, and we want to talk about the pretrial processes. And we think that you can do that. And if you can't, if you think that you've been biased, then that's a recusal situation that you do on a case-by-case basis. So, importantly in this case, so we came to the board, we commented in public comment period about our desire for a hearing, and it is our view, respectfully, that created a very tough relationship and a tough series of communications between the Gaming Control and the Attorney General's office and us. We are curious as to September 13th email from Mr. Gay and to me the correspondence. If I may. Part of Mr. Gay's investigation, she describes as his authority, and I believe he has a lot of authority and a lot of leeway here. He indicated that his client, which he describes to me as Department of Public Safety when he's investigating matters and not the board, that his client felt that there was sufficient cause to hire consultants to come on site and conduct an investigation. And I believe in the September 13th email is related to our request for hearing. Mr. Gay may argue with that and say it was related to our potential application for renewal of our gaming license. But clearly in that September 13th communication, if you look towards the bottom of page one and the top of page two of the correspondence packet, you'll see that the threat of us having to reimburse the state for the costs of the consultants is tied to our hearing request. Now, this is a hearing request where we would stipulate the facts. I believe my good faith estimate of the time for hearing would be 45 minutes or less. We're going to say, this is what happened. We agree. We just disagree. One, whether any of the violations rise to the level of sufficient gravity. And two, we disagree with the multiplier effect. If we think there was a mistake made, we don't think that it should be 7 times a multiplier for a fine amount versus 1 time. We think that we could have gotten direction. We could handle what the board says. We can deal with it. We just want to know, no pun intended, what the price of playing poker is when it comes to asking for a hearing. We want to know how we can reasonably get a 45-minute hearing on stipulated facts and how we can get our due process protected and how we can do it without the notion and threat of being, what, unlimited consulting costs. I completely get that the department can bring in outside auditors. You just had a vote on an audit of Scientific Games. You can do that. You can do that for cause or just as a matter of course. But I don't think it should be tied to our hearing request on stipulated facts. So we are asking for help. We're asking for direction from the board. We're asking for clarification on how is it that we can be self-reporting an event that occurred on February 28th, and here we are in October, and in order to get in front of you to get clarification, we have to withdraw our hearing request and send $3,500. That's what we're asking for help on.
I got one question before we even proceed. So the complaint number 19-20 that's never been before us today, has now been resolved. Is it finally resolved with the payment, or do we have...
I have no idea. Did you receive a payment?
I don't think I have. Well, my question is, and feel free to weigh in, with the final agency action. So presumably, following the current process we have in place, if there's an agreed-to fine, we would receive notice at our next meeting that this was the complaint.
And well, I see a question.
My question is, at what point will we have known about this happened today?
So a notice of violation is a proposed fine that is sent out by the executive director based on his investigation. And in that, I don't have one in front of me, it says you have 30 days to request a hearing. So what will happen, sometimes people will pay right off or whatever. I have suggested to Milt that we at least wait for the 30 days to go by before you folks get copied. So that's why there's a delay before you see it. We want that 30-day period to run for us. So I think the practice is you see these after the 30-day appeal period or whatever request for hearing period runs. In this case, there was a request for hearing, so you never saw it at all. And we were getting ready for a hearing, and I can get into the details about it if you'd like. You can ask me questions about why, what happened, and whatever happened. But then they decided, as apparently to get here today, according to Josh, to withdraw the hearing. So, you know, I guess you will see it. And I told Milt, because we had a request, not to give it to you yet, but if you want to see it, I guess if you're okay with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can pass it around. But it's unusual that people ask for hearings, frankly. And when they do, then I guess you would get the case out of here. So, otherwise, you get them about a month later.
And the process we have in place currently came about as a result of the process we had in place previously being unwieldy. We were receiving redacted complaints that had more X's in it than substance, and everybody was frustrated.
Yeah, and the statute says that after investigation, the executive director can issue a notice of violation of the proposed fine, and I don't want to overspeak for Josh, but we did speak, I believe, to Josh. I know we spoke to Oxford's lawyer, and everybody said, yeah, this would be a good system to have, where essentially Milt's like writing speeding tickets, if you will. It's sort of the equivalent of it. People sign a waiver, they send a fine in, we don't bring cases to the board. And as I've described before, we had a consent agreement, obviously we had discussions about that. That was the first instance where there was disagreement among the parties. Usually the speeding tickets, people sign off, sign the waiver, send in the fine. And now this is pretty much our second case where we've had a disagreement. And we haven't really had a hearing with an entity yet. So that's why this is not what you usually see. Usually you get these in your packets. But the first one, we had a consent agreement because there was disagreements. Now this one, we were going to have a hearing because there were disagreements. So the way to look at it, these are speeding tickets. These are the equivalent of speeding tickets with waivers and fines.
What say you, and Josh, I know you're not done yet, but I got a couple preliminary questions. What say you about the board's ability to know about these things, scheduling of a hearing, for example, and weigh in on that, the fact that there is an investigation underway, and what the violation consists of, not the fact pattern, contained in it, but it's a violation of Rule 27, or, you know, whatever rule.
Yep.
So we're aware that there's an investigation.
Yep.
And for a casino's ability to come before the board to say, we want a hearing. I mean, all of this is frustrating to me personally. I'll speak just for myself that we're not able to know, because I think I can separate myself from knowing of an investigation and deciding later on whether or not the violation should be upheld or not. I kind of agree with what the casino's brought forward.
Okay. Well, once it's a request for a hearing, it's realistically the first time that I'm engaging, and I'm doing my due diligence. And there are times where I might have a discussion with the executive director and the prior notice of violation, say, maybe we reissue it or, you know, stuff like that. So in this case, since I'm presuming Josh has a good way, you're in your mind, I'm okay to talk about this, right?
Please.
In this case, there was a couple of things that in my mind I needed to tie off for the board, and there were multiple counts, and part of the issue was, you know, what is the proper way to count these? The second issue was this theory of entity liability for the actions of several people. There were, I don't know, 7 or 8 people involved. That kind of goes to the count. And I know the board has, and I'm not saying wrongfully, but the board believes that when you have circumstances, you have individuals, they make mistakes. And then, you know, in this case, there were several individuals who made several mistakes. So what, in terms of my investigation and the evidence, see, I have to develop evidence because to the extent that you pose a fine, I need to get in front of a judge, and I need to have evidence on the record. So I was developing, because we were here, and I anticipated hearing an employee or employees at the casino say, this happens nationally, this is the kind of stuff that happens. So in order to do the case, I told Mr. Champion, obviously, Mr. Champion has experience in the industry, but he's not. There's certain law court cases and stuff that talks about relying on executive directors, complaint officers, in terms of evidence. And typically, if there's something that requires the board to draw inferences, meaning let's put these things together, A plus B plus C plus D together equals this, that typically, the line of cases out there requires experts. So you have an expert kind of guide you. When you're looking at this fact pattern, you take a look at this, and this, and this, and this, and this is a reasonable conclusion to draw. This case seemed to really require that. So we did, I told Mill that I needed an expert to do this case because I have, you know, I have sat here and I've heard this person made a mistake, we discipline. This person made a mistake, we discipline. This case was about what is going on at the facility. You have a number of people going on. So how is the casino responsible? Not these individual employees, but how does the casino respond? In reviewing the videotapes with the experts, they raised concerns. They raised alarms during our consult with them about, you know, potential deficiencies up there. Deficiencies either in their training, their oversight, or their culture. And that gave rise to acquiring additional information.
So you did hire outside experts to work on this case?
Yeah. Now, in terms of being, to the extent that they see this as leverage in order for them to pay a $3,000 fine, I would say that once we heard from the experts, that there were concerns, you know, the $3,000 fine. That's why, if you look at the notice of violation, it says, this is based on a very quick evaluation of the facts. We've got an inspector's report that's sent to the casino. The casino then sends back their response. Not demeaning what the executive director does, but that he's kind of constrained to that. He looks at that and says, okay, well, this feels like this kind of violation. Proposes it to the casino, $3,500 fine. Most of the time, people do agree. They say, okay. But we do say in there that if it goes to the next level, I mean, look, if you're going to have a lawyer look at it, I'm going to go where the evidence takes me. And the evidence may take me places elsewhere other than what's constrained in the inspector's report and in the casino's response. And in this case, it's a classic case where the evidence was taking me somewhere different.
Let's stop there. We'll let you finish. There's much more I think you want to join your attorney in.
Yeah, oh, just look. Even in a speeding case, someone gets a hearing. And it's unusual in a speeding case that the state has an expert.
But the analogy I would use is that if you receive a speeding ticket and we then say, I'd like to have a hearing, they would then storm your house, investigate you for everything, and then the hearing is about the speeding ticket plus everything else they found at the house. And that's really what this is about, is that he's, I think in the language, it's, I'm unencumbered by the original notice of violation. I'm going to investigate you based on unspecified concerns. Your whole operation, I think he details the HR team, compliance operation, the whole operation. This is about a specific incident. This has become, we're going to investigate your entire facility. You're going to pay $300 an hour for my experts, and the hearing next year, maybe, if it happens then, will be about a whole bunch of issues that you don't yet know about.
If you may, Mr. Chair and the board, if you could look at Chapter 27 and the rules that describe, one, the complaint and investigation, our duty to cooperate. You can talk about Section 2, the resolution of complaints. Another subsection 2, notice of violation. If the licensee makes a timely request for a hearing, that hearing shall be held in accordance with Section 3 of this rule. This is not the atmosphere that Hollywood Casino is used to. I understand Mr. Gay, Mr. Champion don't view this as a partnership, that they are regulatory enforcers. I get that. But I still believe that the atmosphere can be compliance-based. If a human makes a human mistake on the floor of that casino and an error notification is filed, there might be a training issue with a particular employee. There might be a process education that needs to be gone over with a particular employee. But to just come in and make this bald allegation, I think once again shows that we're here for a reason, that the atmosphere is toxic.
If I might respond to that, our experts are very familiar with national processes. As a matter of fact, they were familiar with Penn National, and they said this Penn corporate know about this, you know. So, I mean, literally, that's what they raised to us. That, from my perspective, raised the concern. And I fully understand if I were defending this case, I would say this is an individual that messed up. The concern is the robustness of the enforcement. Compliance. The experts that look at this noted some things. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, looking at it, things that, you know, asking questions, do they have this? Do they have that? Do we have these But no, we don't have those. And so the experts raised several areas of inquiry, because on its surface, what you had were, how many people were there, Josh? Four people?
There were seven people involved.
Seven people. There were seven people involved. Each person in the internal controls was a control point. So I get it if one person messes up and a second control point catches it. But then the third point doesn't get it, then the fourth. And then they double down. There was a misfill on the table. And I can't remember, because there's several cases. I can't remember if they, I believe, is this the case where they filled out a table fill slip?
Yes.
For the wrong table, knowingly?
And issued an error notification. We're talking about an elapsed time of maybe 20 minutes. He's talking about systemic, robust failures, to use his terms. We're talking about maybe 20 minutes as it took place on the clock. And if I may, all right, so Mr. Gay might need an expert, but I think Mr. Champion's an expert, and I think that the investigators that are employed by the board are experts on what the internal controls are, and I think that the board is well-equipped with very skilled investigators that can see what's going on and see if an internal control was complied with, if there was a mistake made. I have confidence in gaming controls personnel.
Let's try to refrain from trying the case.
Yes.
Or even defending the case. I want to talk about the process.
Right.
Because the process, I've said for months, I personally feel it's still a communication problem oftentimes, and I understand somewhat both sides of it. I equate this to kind of community policing. You know, in community policing, you talk to the people that you're going to enforce laws against, you meet with them, you share things, you talk. You know, you understand each other. Doesn't mean you don't arrest them. You don't issue a summons. You don't. I'm still not convinced we have a good atmosphere of communication with both facilities. Something I'd like to see improved before I leave. But in terms of this particular case, I want to get to what's broken. And, you know, I'm concerned of something that happened in February not being before the board here. Really, it wouldn't be before us today, absent your coming forward to say we want to get that process behind us so we can talk about what we consider the bigger problem to be. So let's get back to what's broken. How could this have been handled differently, in your mind, following the rules and the chapter in place for dealing with complaints?
If the director's going to issue a notice of violation, he should consult with his attorney. Because the statute contemplates if you issue that notice of violation, under the law and the rules, if we disagree with the proposed penalty, we can request a hearing. Simple as that. Simple as that. This investigation that takes place, first of all, notice of alleged violation isn't even contemplated. I take that as more of a request for information from us to cooperate in an investigation. So we view that as a complaint. We were responding to a complaint. The term alleged violation, not to get into semantics, I'm familiar with that. The notice of violation is a formal legal notice, and right here we're hearing it's minimized on one side as a speeding ticket, but now we've got an expert report that's out there that we haven't seen. So I would ask, Mr. Chair, if there's an expert report that your agency has that involves us, we want to know if it exists, and we want it. We want to see it.
Let me just ask.
Can I respond to that? Your casino is under investigation, and whether or not, when you receive that information, there will be a time period where you receive it.
Well, you clearly were telling us about the hourly rate that you were going to ask us to reimburse.
Oh, yeah, we never got a chance to talk about that.
Let's stop there for a second. I got a question. I want the board to be able to ask questions, too. So following what you just laid out, let's say there's an issue at the casino, comes to the attention of the executive director, and he's contemplating bringing a violation, and he goes to his attorney. What's going to prevent the process at that point from being, well, then I think we ought to get an outside expert in at that point to look at this from an investigative standpoint to decide whether a notice of violation should be issued. That's what would worry me.
Well, I think ultimately it's going to be your call as a board. It's you, the board, that's tasked with investigating the complaint. If there is an issue the Department of Public Safety thinks it needs to do independently, that's a separate and apart from the pending notice.
That was the fundamental. The Department of Public Safety investigates these things.
I think to be clear, I think the rule allows for both.
Yeah.
The board can bring forward a complaint, ask the department to investigate it, or the department on its own accord, right?
Correct.
Can bring forward an investigation.
But so, in either case, the department has to investigate.
Correct. The board's okay. Not investigating.
Right.
We're not an investigative board.
So in this case, the department received the information through its own inspectors. So I'm not sure how the board would get involved prior to a hearing.
Yeah.
If I may, I think that this, as Katie Foster, attorney, I think this is conflating the issues here because the rule regarding the notice of the violation contemplates a specific process under which the investigation and the notice of that violation is issued. The statute also discusses the separate investigation process, and Attorney Gray is absolutely right that the Department of Public Safety can do an investigation. That is separate from the investigation process that's articulated under the notice of violation. So if in response to a complaint, an investigation is required, it needs to be done before the notice of violation is issued based on the Chapter 27 rules that are articulated there. It also contemplates in Section 1 of that, which I can see but can't necessarily reference, where it says complaints and investigations, that the board should be receiving copies of all these complaints. So whether you know the facts or whatever is known to the board or not, the rule says the board gets copies of the complaints.
Yeah, to date that hasn't happened based on the process that we thought had been worked out. Originally, the board was involved in some things that, frankly, didn't have to happen. And so we asked the department and the Attorney General's office to get together with the facilities, try to work out a complaint process that made sense, that didn't frustrate casinos, that didn't frustrate the board.
I understand. And I'm relatively new to this in the sense that I've been working on this process for a very short time, but objectively, I've been reviewing the rules and statutes and helping to advise our client on the processes here. And just based on the rules that are in place relative to this process, there is procedure articulated. And the concern is, if we are not going to follow the procedure articulated in the rules, where is the procedure articulated so that we can be sure that it's being followed properly? Because that's all we're looking for.
And I'll tell you, as the process was laid out in 2016, I believe, when this process was created, if it was followed the way it was laid out, I think we would be okay with that. I think our issue is the fact that it so frequently deviates.
Yeah, and in my mind, that goes back to the communication piece, which is fundamental to the relationship, I think. So I want to make sure the board gets in. Commissioner, jump in.
Yeah, process-wise, I apologize for popping up here. I'm going to have to run to a meeting across town for 11 o'clock. But the number one thing that I see that I would like to address is the communication aspect of this. We've had conversations about that. I had asked that we set up a meeting with both casinos in the state, with me, to talk to them, to say hello, to say, my name's Mike, how you doing? Where are we going from here? I don't like to hear the word toxic and used in any atmosphere. And then when I was briefed on this case recently, I asked that we step that process up to make sure that that happened in a more timely manner. The reason it was delayed, we were hoping we were going to piggyback with the employee. By the way, hello, how you doing? But there's no, I don't want to wait for that to go. The nuts and bolts, I won't wait in on at this particular time. I do think it is about process, not about the specifics around, because we're not trying a case here today. I think it is about process. There's things we can do, we as in the gambling control unit can do, to better that process, then we're all in. And that's not maybe, what are we going to do? I'm interested in having those conversations. We may have a fundamental disagreement on some of those things. When attorneys get together, that's liable to happen. And we may be in that situation right now. I don't know. There may be a fundamental disagreement on a lot of different things in regards to this specific case. My focus is on communication, relationships, and process. And I can tell you as the commissioner of DPS that I'm interested in working on those various things, as is Milt for sure. I will be reaching out. I think we already have tried to reach out to set up a meeting, not again to talk about specific cases, but to chat it up a little bit and just see where we're at, see where we want to go. So that's what I got. And I apologize for popping up in the middle of a very serious conversation to throw that out, but that's what I have. More than happy to answer anything if we think that's appropriate.
I think that's a more succinct way of saying that's what we're after.
Yeah.
So we want investigations that come forward to be looked into, to be resolved, and when they can't be resolved, to come to hearing. So, you know, we don't want anyone to feel that they have to pay a fine to talk to us. That's not what we're about. That's why I was asking whether or not this has been paid or not paid, or, you know, people should have the ability, casinos should have the ability to come before us and say, we're requesting a hearing, and that should be without delay, and it should be after a discussion, which involves the department, which involves Mr. Gay representing the department, and then the board should hear matters that can't be resolved or that need guidance. You know, that's our role. So I think we're in the same place.
I would agree. I want to make sure that I'm clear. I don't believe that was ever the intent, certainly from DPS or our representatives, to say that, we're going to bring in experts, therefore, geez, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Hopefully you go away and just pay us $3,500. That's never the intent.
Yeah.
That never was the intent. If that's the way it feels, then that's poor as well.
Yeah.
No matter what the intent was, if that's the approach that we feel like we got strong-armed in order to pay a fine and go away, that's not what happened, nor would that ever happen, based on professionals, I'm sure, on both sides of the table here. That's not the case. I do think there are investigative processes, there are things where there's going to be a natural rub. I think that's part of an investigation, that's part of a process that says, hey, we think you did something wrong and we want to change that. So I want to make sure I'm abundantly clear that I'm not saying that occurred from our end by any means. But I get it. I also hear people, and I understand.
I'll add one thing, then let's jump in. I also don't want anyone to think that we don't feel as a board, collectively, I'm sure, that there may be processes where an expert has to be brought in. We realize we have experts in place, we have people in place, but on occasion there'll be matters where I think outside people have to be brought in. That should be rare, but I think it could happen. And so we're not suggesting that it shouldn't ever occur either.
Yeah, I can definitely appreciate that. And I think that, you know, in a process where you're doing an investigation and testifying and all kinds of fun stuff, we have an expert. You have an expert. Who's right? And how are you supposed to determine that? You're not meant to be experts. So maybe there would be situations where to bring somebody in from the outside would be beneficial. I would also agree with you that it's not a standard practice. I understand it to be that it hasn't been a standard practice. And I wouldn't expect that this would happen all the time. But it apparently was what happened in this
end. Well, I was just going to say, as it relates to that whole issue of pressure at least being felt from the people on this side of the room, that there was pressure there to settle and not go to a hearing, that gets into the whole communication process. I mean, you feel that that was not the case, and I would suspect that's right. But people on the other side of the room here felt that. So that's where the problem with communication comes in. Pretty serious, I think.
I think that it's been my experience, whether it's two people or 2,000, whenever you debrief a problem, the vast, vast, vast majority of the times, it does come down to communication. Whether you're doing a tactical operation or you're doing something around finances or you're doing a debrief after a case, if there's a failing somewhere along the way, oftentimes it is communication that causes those particular issues. Now, when communication starts turning into a process where it's A and then B and then C, and it goes away from, hey, call Mike and ask a question, that can definitely cause a rub, if you will. But if we can deal with these things as early as possible without having to do all of this, then that's the preferred method, for sure.
I agree. Have fun across town.
All
right,
thanks.
Anyone else?
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Turn it back over to the casino to finish.
I mean, look, statute's in place, the rules are in place, and we don't think it was followed here.
And the
September 13th communication from Mr. Gay speaks for itself. Read it literally and read it in context.
misinterpretation of the meeting. But I just want to add that part of the driving force to this hearing, which we never wanted it to get to that point either, is please do not focus too much on this incident itself. This is a minor incident that happens in every casino in America. Rarely does it ever even amount to a warning in most jurisdictions. We can debate between his experts whether that's true or not. The real reason we felt that this had to come to a hearing is because this is the new normal for us. This is just one of any incident that we get. Minor issue, fixed immediately, reported immediately, no penalty, no damage to the state or anyone involved. We admit that it happened. We take steps. We work closely with the state inspectors. They frequently comment and compliment us on our reaction. All of a sudden becomes a giant issue, and more unfortunately, more frequently, an instantaneous fine. Whereas in 2016, when the process was rolled out, it was very much a progressive discipline system. Letter of guidance, warning. Then I think the example used was $500 fine. We were very encouraged last month when you all discussed, and I believe for one of the first times saw our responses to these notice of violations. I think that alone is a huge step in the right direction, and I'm extremely hopeful that you continue to get those, because we do take a lot of time to explain our position and, most importantly, the things we're doing to the trends. In this case, for example, 24 months we had never had a fill issue, which in most casinos in the country would be cause for celebration. But we also detail out all the things we're doing to make sure that this kind of issue doesn't happen in the future. Very encouraged. The other thing, though, and I don't know that they explained it as accurately as I would, the new normal is that every single incident we get is 10 counts for one incident. 15 counts. Sometimes it's because there's multiple steps in the process. Sometimes it's because there's multiple people. Sometimes it's a multiplication effect. That's where we are. In February, I sat in this same room and for 7 minor incidents was threatened with an $86,000 fine if I didn't sign that consent agreement. That's the...
Okay, we're not going to get into a consent agreement.
I just, again, my point is this is one of many instances that are pending, and it's the normal for us in the casinos in Maine at this point, and that's unfortunately our frustration, and this was our hope. Our hope has always been we want the board to be aware of this, and hopefully they'll feel similar to us about some of the facts.
Right. Anything further before we wrap up? What you came for us to hear, I'm going to give Ron a chance just to wrap up anything in terms of process, again, not litigate the case.
Oh, in terms of process, I believe it was made extremely clear, both in the notice of violation and the communications, that this quote threat for the cost of experts, you folks would have to order that. We can't order that. So we would have to persuade you that, one, the expert retention was necessary. Two, that the behavior rose to a level that you all thought they should have to pay for the experts. This is not something that we could just do. If they felt confident that nothing was wrong, then certainly having an expert come in should not be an issue. And beyond that, unless I convinced you that there was a problem, they wouldn't necessarily have been required to pay for that.
What would be the state's response if the facility came forward and said, regarding the incident on this date, we stipulate to these facts? The facts you allege, we'll stipulate to the facts. Our argument is whether or not that should be one violation or 7, and whether or not the fine should be $500 or $3,500.
The issue is that there's indications that either the system broke down or that there is not a culture of compliance. And that's the issue that was raised by our experts. I would assume that would be a concern to this board. And in order for them to prevail, they say, this is a employee that made a mistake. Mistake happens all the time. It's only been one fill error. Again, what we're looking at is a pattern. Do they have a robust compliance program? 7 employees.
But the answer to the question I think I asked, you didn't give, is what would you, if you brought forward a violation as he did in this case, I still haven't seen it, but seven
yeah.
counts.
In this case, we wanted an expert to look at the seven counts to see whether or not it was indicative of something else, and that was weighing in.
So the question of whether or not that should be done on the front end or the back end, if he were to come and say, look, we're thinking this is what we see, and your response is, as a prosecutor, we may want to get someone to look deeper.
If the casinos are asking that we don't proceed on a minimal investigation like we have, okay, I will talk to Mel, I will talk to the commissioner about that. We will fully investigate cases. We can do that. And not issue notice of violations right on. They haven't worked with us. It's when we have the disagreement. And frankly, for 85% of the cases, they work pretty well.
Anything from the board?
Well, I just got a few things that helped me to kind of kick off. Just in terms of the kind of the number of violations and whatever. And, like in February, we concluded on a previous issue concerning Hollywood, and we settled on all of that, and that had a lot of build up to it. And it's like we drew a line in the sand, okay, going forward. I remember that agreement saying very specifically that the management and operations at Hollywood does have competence enough, and that they are concerned about the compliance issues and things of that nature. So I've been kind of watching the different violations that Mel would be putting out there, and there haven't been that many. So what you're saying, you feel because there were seven employees in this process,
so
this
my
one event,
who is an expert that looked at it,
that, well,
my feeling doesn't matter.
For that one situation, seven people were involved with it somehow, and that's only the one violation.
Well, part of the question is how do you count violations?
Well, I guess the point that I'm trying to make, Mr. Chairman, is that it seems that the Hollywood, and when you're suggesting systemic lack of compliance concerns, I don't know how you can build it off that one situation resulted in seven individuals.
That's why
I don't see the details of that, of how that all
you're
played
you're
out.
You're correct. That's why
so
we anticipated sending people up there to interview human resource people, look at the training materials, interview the employees involved. For example, if somebody knew that something was wrong, did they have the freedom to say, hold it, this isn't right?
That's literally what the area
right,
of
so
that's
right, but that, excuse me.
Well, let me stop moving. I don't want to litigate the case. I want to get back to the process. And the process needs to be, in my mind, one in which we said right along as a board, we want voluntary compliance from the casinos. We want them to feel free, to not feel free, but feel obligated to come forward when they have management failures. And in my mind, and I think the board agrees with this, that the overall concern is that basic management practices remain in place or are built to prevent continued
right.
violations. So when one thing happens that's indicative of a human mistake, that's a human mistake, and you fix it and you move on. If there is a pattern, we need to take steps. So I agree with what you said there. And when the facility is taking steps to do that, we don't want anyone to feel threatened by the use of, if you want to go forward, we'll have experts come in, we'll investigate this as part of my prosecution, or you can pay the fine. Never
no,
want to see that. I don't
not.
Think that happened here
right.
necessarily, but it can't happen. That
correct.
Should not be
absolutely.
The process. We've got to come to fixing this so that complaints come before us timely. I think, and I want the board to weigh into where we get to at least a consensus that I want to know about investigations as soon as we can know about them, and I want to know about the scheduling of these things so that they can move without being tainted to the point we can't hear it. And I agree with what Mr. Tardy said, that I think we can afford people due process by knowing what the violation is that's being looked into, and to know about the timing of it. if it comes to a hearing, what we got to decide is, did you lay out a specific fact pattern that reaches a violation?
Mm-hmm.
And is that violation to a gravity that constitutes a fine or a warning or a letter of guidance or a fine? And I don't think that the amount of the fine, you know, we said right along, it needs to be sufficient to gain compliance and hold compliance in place. We don't have to be Pennsylvania or Massachusetts and hand down $1 million fines, but we have to hold them in compliance. That's our role. And what's obviously what is going on now isn't working, or we wouldn't be here. I don't think we'd be here hearing the frustration we're hearing. There's people who are talking. There's people in the audience that want to talk, and I'm not letting them talk. But that's what we need to fix. And I'd be particularly concerned if the other casino is feeling the same thing. If they are, that tells me we have a problem. There's going to be issues where we don't agree, and that's fine. That's what the board's doing.
So what do you perceive the problem to be? The fact
I still think it's communication. I don't think we're communicating well. I don't.
Okay.
I heard the commissioners talk about that. It needs to be better communication, one of trust, where everyone feels that you are the regulators. They are going to do what the regulations require. Their license depends on it. Their license not only depends on it in Maine, it depends on it in every jurisdiction in which they do business. Because if they commit violations here, those have to be reported across their license.
And to the extent that we have a belief that things aren't happening, is there a point where communication ends and investigation begins?
Sure.
And we verify?
Sure. And then, then there's a timely violation with a timely hearing, and then ultimately the board will sit in judgment of the violation. But this, you know, this seems to be an extended period of time for what, at least outwardly, again, and I haven't seen it. I'd like to see it now, and I'd like more time before we really close the discussion. But I'd like to see the complaint now. I'd like to see what the state has, since it's a closed matter. I'd like the whole board to have it, and I'd like the board to be able to go back and read the materials that have been brought forward. And to the extent that we should, I think we should continue this discussion in November or December, in which the board would have had time to digest some of this, organize some thoughts, and come back for potential, you know, movement in some regard. I mean, this matter is behind us.
And I agree with you. I don't think we're going to conclude here today. I need time to, as you say, really go through all this stuff. But I would like to say that it feels like there's between us and the gambling community out there, the casinos, that there's a big iron curtain that comes down right in front of us. And we don't get the chance to really interact at all in a lot of different situations. And I think I heard Mr. Tardy say that other boards don't operate that way. I think I heard you say that. So why are we different, if that's the case? I mean, why can't we, as you're saying, why can't we hear about the other notices of violations and the certain processes going on and that type of thing before? You know, right now we can't do anything. So we're kind of back into this corner.
Well,
and now we're coming out fighting to figure out what we're doing here. So
investigation.
I think that process has changed.
Investigation is a non-public. So we can't talk to you about investigations we're doing.
Well, right now we don't talk about anything. So what was Mr. Tardy saying about it in terms of what other boards?
So once there's a charge.
A notice of violence.
Once there's a charge. It's recognized by the rules in Chapter 27. A speeding ticket is not a laughing matter for the casino. I mean, we can joke and say it in jest, but but you do have a trial on a speeding ticket.
If what I've heard suggested is that a full Office of Attorney General investigation will occur prior to a notice of violation, I will discuss that with my client. And that's certainly something that we can do. I'm not sure the regulated community would prefer to do that.
That's absurd.
I personally agree with complicating things. That's the discussion. I mean, quite honestly, these things aren't that complicated, right? Most of the time.
I don't know. We've never had a hearing on an entity. To me, it is complicated. When we do hearings at other agencies, they are complicated. We have evidence. We have witnesses. Okay? This isn't just coming up here and jawboning like we're doing right here. We have a process, and we're following. And this is not the process.
But we had hearings here in the past that were overly complicated, and the reason we decided to try to get to this process is to make it more streamlined, less complicated, to have the facilities agree to violations that they agreed to, right? To not have to come before the board to make it more cumbersome. And only the ones that can't be agreed to should be coming before us.
And we could have done that with this case. There's absolutely no reason that we could not have done that with this case.
So something's still going on that involves more communication, and it sounds like the commissioner is going to get involved, which I think, frankly, is helpful. Because it's hard to talk in an open setting in front of a board who has to act as a board to maybe resolve issues that can be resolved if the parties can communicate. And if to the extent they can't, and then there's a process that has to be followed that involves complaint, we want it to be timely, we want it to get before us, we want to, frankly, know about it as soon as we can know about it, so that we can figure out or help with scheduling if there's a problem. So if they're saying they want a hearing and you're saying we're not ready to proceed, we can maybe help ferret out why. I think that's what we're after. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think that meeting the commissioner's talking about, I think will be helpful in bringing this process forward. Hopefully that can happen between this meeting and our next meeting.
Just last thing. Just the expert report. You can send that out?
No. Because we're investigating the casino for their compliance.
Or I don't do this or don't do that. I follow the processes.
the statute tells me, I go to that first, then I go to the rules, and so forth and so on. And then I also come to the board for direction, all right? But I just want to make it absolutely clear that there's could it be better? Everything could be better, all right? But to say that there's absolutely no communication between me and the facilities is just not true.
I don't think anybody said that.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying,
and I want to be clear, it's not working. If it was working, the communication piece of it, I don't think we'd be feeling and sensing the frustration that everyone's sensing. So we need to fix that.
Yeah, the communication is in this.
If it's the first time you've heard me say that, then people aren't listening, because I've said that for months. We need communication, is something that needs to be done every day. And we shouldn't feel that because we regulate, we mean the state, and they're the regulated, that there can't be some working relationship that keeps these things from happening. We have a 14-year history or more of working with these facilities, and the atmosphere, in my mind, hasn't been like this ever in its history, and it's that way now. And I sense it's not just one facility, it's both, and that's what we want to fix. Having said that, we're not talking about not having regulation. We're not talking about not bringing notices of violation. We're not talking about not holding people accountable. We are. That's what we want. We want voluntary compliance where things are fixed at the lowest and easiest and most resolvable level it can be fixed, and that only the complaints that rise to the top and have to come to a hearing are heard. And if that's what happens, that means the rest of the process is working.
Okay, well, I'm just making a comment that this is one particular incident. Let's not make it spoil the whole month, the whole quarter, because of one particular incident. I've also had conversations on a lot of other matters way more positive than this. I made a decision, there's processes and all that stuff, but I don't want it made out like, you know, I have no communication with these facilities whatsoever. That's not the case.
Understood. All right, anything else on the report?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Put item 7 to bed for today, and let's go to public comment. Is there anyone here in the public that would like to comment, bring anything before the board? Oop, heard something, no? Introduce yourself, please.
Dan Walker, Freddie Flaherty, on behalf of Oxford Casino. Just wanted to not to bring up what you just talked about, but just that the Oxford Casino has gone through something very similar to what you heard from Hollywood, and just that we very much support this effort going forward.
Okay. The board would encourage Oxford to join this discussion. We hope that the commissioner convenes the meeting he talked about, and let's see if that helps make process, and then we'll bring this up again at a future meeting in the agenda item. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, so that brings us to the next meeting date. I have a personal conflict with November 19th, but that doesn't mean we can't meet. I just want the board to be aware I will be out of state on business and unable to attend on the 19th. You may or may not be back and ready.
No, my surgery is the 21st.
Of November?
Yes.
So you go ahead.
So it'll be after that date, but.
So,
well, can you send out some dates when you're available, when we can see if we can tie in all the other boards to a date? That's going to be done before the 21st. Because you're going to be. I probably have my calendar on me right now, Tim.
Okay. Why don't we communicate, we'll get Ron's schedule, we'll get your schedule.
Okay.
But for me, it looks like it would be the week before.
And that's another Tuesday holiday, which presents difficulty for me. I mean, Tuesday following a Monday holiday.
If it's the 12th, I would not be available.
Would Tuesday the 26th start to work? I know in front of your calendar, that's when's Thanksgiving? Thursday the 28th?
28th, yeah. Yeah, that'd be definitely the board.
All right, I'll ask two questions, and then I'll share an email with the board. We'll look for dates at work, and we'll look for a quorum if I can't be here. If we have a quorum, I suggest we keep the date. All right. hearing no other business, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Moved.
For a second? Second by Al. Those in favor? We stand adjourned.
Tim, do you have a pen, right, to sign those? And
yes.
Then I got Ron.
One sec.
Okay.
Oh, you.
Thank you, Jason.